I hope the Australian government hear our voice and change this decision.
Coronavirus continues to cripple efforts to overcome it. It's Tuesday, September 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the COVID threat to indigenous people. A huge typhoon sweeps over the Koreas. Photographing COVID. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Campaigners are urging Australia to restart a refugee program that has left thousands of people stranded overseas. Australia closed its international borders in March because of the coronavirus pandemic. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Refugee Council of Australia has estimated that about 4,000 refugees with humanitarian visas allowing entry into Australia are currently stranded overseas. They're unable to travel because Australia's international border was closed to foreign nationals in March to curb the spread of COVID-19. David O'Deesh is an Iraqi refugee in Australia. His sister and her family were granted humanitarian visas in January and had planned to reunite with him in March. The family had escaped the Islamic State terror group in their home city of Mosul in northern Iraq and fled to Lebanon, where they remain. O'Deesh says his sister is struggling to survive in a small apartment in Beirut, and he is pleading with the authorities in Canberra to let the family come.
They have all the documents ready, all the approval, and unfortunately what happened, this pandemic, COVID-19, everything stops and the border closed. I hope the Australian government hear our voice and change this decision.
The family has said it has applied twice for special permission from the government in Canberra to fly to Australia. The requests have been denied. Australia's international borders are expected to stay closed until 2021. Campaigners believe refugees should, like citizens and permanent residents, be allowed into the country. The Department for Home Affairs has appeared unmoved. It has said the border restrictions have been successful in slowing the spread of coronavirus in Australia. 12,700 refugees were resettled in Australia in 2018. The majority were from Iraq, with others escaping Myanmar, Syria and Afghanistan. The government has said Australia has one of the world's most generous resettlement programs and has given sanctuary to almost 900,000 refugees since the end of the Second World War. However, its detention of asylum seekers who try to reach Australia by sea in offshore camps in the South Pacific has drawn repeated international condemnation.
Phil Mercer is also following a coronavirus deal signed by Australia with an international drug company. That deal is raising ethical concerns among prominent church leaders.
Australia has signed a deal with the pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca to produce and distribute a vaccine being developed by Britain's Oxford University if the treatment works. But three of Australia's most senior archbishops have written to Prime Minister Scott Morrison, urging him to reconsider the agreement, saying the use of fetal tissue in the research is deeply immoral. Dr. Glenn Davis is the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney.
To use that tissue then for science is reprehensible. Once I know something, that it is morally compromised, then it is my job to speak out about it.
The Oxford University study uses embryonic kidney cells harvested from a female fetus in the Netherlands in 1973. Dr. Nick Coatsworth, Australia's Deputy Chief Medical Officer, says the work adheres to strict guidelines.
There are strong ethical regulations surrounding the use of any human cell, and this is a very professional, highly powered research unit.
Other vaccines in Australia use genetic material that originally came from a human fetus. They include inoculations against rubella, hepatitis A, and rabies. Senior religious leaders have not explicitly called for a boycott of the potential Oxford University COVID-19 drug. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Sanctions signal tougher U.S. stance toward Beijing over South China Sea. Philippine president pardons U.S. Marine convicted in killing of transgender woman. Thailand's conservative government grapples with royal reckoning. China freezes visa renewals for journalists with U.S.-based news outlets. New parliament tests Singapore's appetite for opposition politics. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more are found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. A powerful typhoon barreled up the already soaked Korean Peninsula Monday, toppling trees, causing small landslides, and knocking out power to thousands of South Koreans before taking aim at flood-prone North Korea. Around 17,000 South Korean homes lost electricity, and at least 48 structures were destroyed across the country as Typhoon Haishen, meaning sea god in Chinese, made landfall in the southeastern city of Ulsan and moved northward up the east coast. Television broadcasts showed flooded streets and overflowing rivers in the southern tip of South Korea. South Korean officials have not reported any deaths. However, at least four people were missing and dozens injured after the storm swept through southern Japan, according to local media. Around 300,000 Japanese homes were without power as of late Monday. North Korea is still recovering from another major typhoon last week. Ahead of this typhoon, North Korea state television broadcast live reports showing waves striking the shore bordering South Korea. The Korean Peninsula usually sees just one typhoon per year, but has been hit by three in the past 2 weeks. The situation has been made worse by a historically wet monsoon season, which ended last month. At one point this summer, South Korea saw 49 consecutive days of rain. The storms are especially dire for North Korea, which is vulnerable to flooding. The country lacks adequate infrastructure and suffers from widespread deforestation, resulting in part from people cutting down trees for fuel or firewood or to clear land for farming. Media in North Korea are not usually transparent about natural disasters or other calamities. State television usually only broadcasts prepackaged reports during a set schedule. But during recent storms, North Korean state TV has been more flexible, sometimes even airing live reports during the overnight hours. Happening now in Asia, schools reopened across Cambodia Monday after coronavirus eased in the country. Cambodia officially registered 274 coronavirus cases, and 272 of them have recovered, according to the health ministry. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The United Nations warns COVID-19 possesses a critical threat to hundreds of millions of indigenous people worldwide. To mark the International Day of the World's Indigenous People, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on countries to respond to their needs and respect their cultural, social, and political rights. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
Many of the more than 476 million indigenous people around the world now live in remote locations. Their traditional way of life and distance from heavily populated areas have largely insulated them from many diseases commonly circulating. However, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres notes that throughout history, indigenous peoples have been decimated by diseases brought from elsewhere to which they had no immunity. Unfortunately, the coronavirus is following the same trajectory. The UN chief says the inequality, stigmatization, and discrimination to which indigenous peoples are subjected are helping to spread the coronavirus through their communities. He says limited access to health care, clean water, and sanitation makes it difficult to contain the disease.
Indigenous peoples work primarily in traditional occupations and subsistence economies or in the informal sector. They have all been adversely affected by the pandemic. Indigenous women, who are often the main providers of food and nutrition for their families, have been particularly hard hit with the closure of markets for handicrafts, produce, and other goods.
The UN reports COVID-19 has infected more than 70,000 indigenous people in the Americas, the epicenter of the pandemic. Among them, it says, are nearly 23,000 members of 190 indigenous peoples in the Amazon basin. More than 1,000 have lost their lives. The Amazon and other tropical forests that are home to indigenous peoples have suffered environmental damage and economic deprivation. Guterres says these people are at the forefront in demanding environmental and climate action to protect their precious reserves.
Lapsed enforcement of environmental protections during the crisis has brought increasing encroachment on indigenous peoples' territories by illegal miners and loggers. Many indigenous people have been victims of threats and violence, and many have lost their lives in the face of such threats.
The United Nations says indigenous peoples will have a better chance of tackling the coronavirus if they can exercise their rights to self-government and self-determination. The world body is calling for universal respect and protection of their inalienable rights. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The coronavirus pandemic is hitting small businesses in America especially hard. One Washington, D.C. photographer is using her camera to document their journey through the economic crisis. Maxim Moskowkov has the story.
Barbershop owner, owner of a vintage clothing store, concert organizer, and a Greek bakery owner. Even before the COVID-19 pandemic, these people had to work hard to keep their businesses afloat. But the lockdown forced many had to temporarily close. But some have managed to get through the toughest times and stay in business. It's their stories that have inspired Washington, D.C.-based photographer Violeta Marcello.
Mentally, for me, you know, to lose all your jobs and contracts and, you know, being on the phone with unemployment, I mean, these are very stressful things you're dealing with day to day. I didn't see anyone paying attention to the small business owners.
That's how Marcello's project started. Each photograph is accompanied by the story of people behind the small business and how they have survived the pandemic-fueled crisis. Eric Riggio and Angela Justice co-own an interior design business.
We're a small company and, you know, our employees are like family to us. So we really look at this as we can't provide for our family. You know what I mean? Literally and figuratively, as everything was put on hold. We do what every entrepreneur does. You just have to pivot and figure it out. We didn't have time to sit there and boohoo and cry or whatever.
Riggio says the crisis has taught her something useful.
So we did launch eDesign Services. We did, during this time, we're able to put our boutique online. That was great. There's a silver lining. I feel like we've done a lot. We've looked at back systems. We've looked at what we're not doing better. My business partner and I have looked at how we could, what are our roles and responsibilities, and really looked at those.
Louis Hankins, who owns a Latin American restaurant, hoped his business would finally go debt-free in 2020. The pandemic pushed back that goal, but he is still grateful.
I'm just thankful to still be here, still have my doors open.
Marcello says her photo stories show so much, from despair and hope to hard work and inspiration.
I want people to understand what small businesses have to go through, what they have been going through during a pandemic. It is not so easy to shut your doors and then open them again.
There were about 28,000 businesses in Washington, D.C. with 50 or fewer workers in 2019, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us for VOA Asia. Continue on by following us online at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, all at voanews.com. We also thank those who help bring this program to you. our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.